You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
All right, welcome back.
Welcome back, Curtis. How you doing?
I'm super. A couple beers here, a couple beers there. It smooths off all of the rough edges, I should say. So I'm just wondering, like, I was pretty good. I'm a really gullible person, and so whenever I read anything on the internet, I almost immediately think it's true, except for April Fools. I'm prepared on April Fools. So I'm thinking that maybe I should just go through life thinking that every day is April Fools Day. So that I don't end up, fall for any of the, the oldest tricks in the book per se. But I was wondering if you had a chance to taste that Coors Light IPA. I saw an advertisement for it.
I thought that sounded amazing. I have not tried that, and I was trying to get a keg of it, but we couldn't get any. That's Coors.
The Coors Light IPA comes in at a refreshing 4.5%, hopped up to whatever it is. But for anyone who is really worried about whether or not they know their beer is cold, evidently the mountains turn blue when you put that can in a cold enough environment.
Even the IPA, huh?
Right, yeah. So that you can be sure to numb your taste buds before you have any sort of opportunity to taste the hops, I suppose.
Yeah, so did you – you said you were getting better at the April Fool's thing. So did you ever fall for some of these brewery fake beers? There's some pretty good ones out there. This year there were some good ones.
I'm trying to think. It seemed like maybe Schlafly had a really good one last year. But for the life of me, I can't remember what it was last year. This year they had, it was so outrageous that it was just fun to watch the whole way through their Schaff Light. And they ended up, when they were pouring the beer, it was just carbonated water. So as they're pouring this beer into the glass, it's crystal clear. And so they had their whole range, the Schaff Light, the Schaff Light Plus, and then they had the fancy Schaff Light as you go. So make sure you go to YouTube and check out Schaffly Brewing Brewery. They're out of, St. Louis. So and now they are officially the largest American-owned brewery in St. Louis, which is a moniker that they take with pride, seeing as though now Anheuser-Busch is foreign owned kind
of. Oh yeah, well all of them are. I just saw another cool one that was a place called the Porter Beer Bar. They did for April Fool's an Anheuser-Busch tap takeover. That was really cool. They have Bud Light, vintage 2010 Bud Light Platinum, and they actually typed this up, which I think is really cool. That going that extra distance, putting this out in front of somebody when they walked into your place, it would be awesome. They have Strawberry Arita, Lime Arita. I mean,
did they do any food pairings with that?
No, they didn't do any food pairings, but they actually did descriptions like Bud Light Strawberry Arita randalized with fresh strawberries for extra fruit flavor with FROOT.
Randalized for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what a randall is. It's this giant tube, and it's stuffed with whatever you want to put into. So like infused. So it's kind of like kind of like a tea, maybe, I suppose, as you're pushing it through. But it started off with Dogfish Head 120, and every once in a while they would jam this giant tube full of hops, and then they would run the beer through it to give it this fresh infusion of hops. And since then, they called it Randall the Enamel. Randall the Enamel Animal. Playing up the fact that there was so much hops in it that it would probably peel the enamel off your teeth. But we've got these things all over the place now, and at Surf there's the Hop Rocket, which is a similar kind of thing where whatever beer they decide to put on the Hop Rocket, they run through these fresh hops that happen to be there. And we'll get to that certainly, because those are some of the best times to go into the brewery to taste a new beer. What else you have?
This one's hilarious. This is from a couple of years ago, but it's Stone and Brewdog, a golden imperial stout. So, I mean, I was really disappointed because Stone didn't do one this year, but they get really elaborate. I mean, they'll have a press release, and they'll have on their website when you go on there. I mean, just some really cool. They get really into it. They'll do a bottle design. But yeah, this one was really cool. The Luciferian.
I've had a
Guinness.
I've had a blonde stout before. It was crazy. It was by Seal Beach, and then now they just opened one in Long Beach. The brewery, Beach House Barbecue.
Oh yeah, Beach House Barbecue.
Excuse me. They did one, and it comes to you blonde, and it tastes like an imperial stout. I have never had anything.
How do you do that?
I have no idea. I have never had anything play with my senses.
Our guest brewer is shaking his head.
So. I've never had anything play with my senses so crazy than what I was tasting at that point. That was crazy. So that's not. Maybe they ended up taking a cue from that.
Maybe they did. Yeah.
You know what? I can do that. You know, whether they added a liquid extract into it, who knows? But it was pretty crazy.
So it was roasty and everything.
Yeah. And it was golden. It was crazy. But it did go well with whatever the barbecue was, because anything goes well. Any beer goes well with barbecue. But
yeah, right.
So that was a good one to have there. You got something else you're pulling up?
No, I was just looking at some of the other April Fool's ones. But I think the one that's fun to do, especially like what we did, is just kind of allude to what you're going to have on tap that day. But you're right. People are catching on to it, but every once in a while, especially when it was on a Monday, it was kind of nice because you can catch people off guard. Like, mm-hmm. You're not expecting the
waking up groggy after an Easter
waking up after an Easter weekend. That's right,
right.
Yeah, but yeah, I think the biggest one we were talking about earlier at the bar was the Wincoop,
yeah,
which an April Fool's beer that turned into a real seasonal beer now.
Right, so if you hear an extra voice come in, that's Chaz. He's the head brewer from Surf Brewery. He's our guest tonight. So, another voice that's not ours coming in, you'll know who's talking to you. But so Wincoop, a few years ago, whatever it was, 3-4 years ago, decides that for April Fool's, they're going to make a Rocky Mountain Oyster Stout. And I don't know if I could think of anything that would turn my stomach more than a Rocky Mountain Oyster Stout, playing off the fact that there's plenty of oyster stouts out there.
Yeah, tons of oyster stouts.
Right. And so let's take it one step further. Let's put some bull testicle in this beer. Thanks.
But they're from Colorado, right?
Yeah.
And that's a big delicacy over there.
You know,
in all fairness to the brewery.
I don't even know if we should give them that break. I don't know. I tend to side with any male animal, and if we're cutting these balls off and then feeding them to people, I just as a general sort of, I'm going to take a stand at something. That's what I do. I mean, I don't bring politics into this show at all, but I say just no. Just no.
Have you ever had it?
Right. Yes, I have. Unfortunately, it's there's a few things in my life where I wish I hadn't done it, and I ended up tasting it. And you know, if you like a tough piece of liver, then there you go.
That's the beer for you. That's the meal for you.
Otherwise, I say stay away from the Rocky Mountain Oyster.
I was just looking. I remember one of my favorite ones from Stone that I forgot. It was only 2 years ago, but it was making fun of those shots that you get of different drinks that you could buy at a liquor store. I don't know if you've ever seen those, but there were these little pouches, and it'll be like, you know, rum and coke already mixed, and you did it. So they did bastard shots, which was all the flavor and alcohol of a 22-ounce beer in a 3-ounce carrying case. That was awesome. I really loved that one. I totally forgot about that one.
That one, yeah, because I have their book that they came out with a year or two ago. And so there's a whole chapter devoted to Stone's April Fool's jokes, and it is the best chapter in that book. I mean, I love everything else about it, but if you just to sit back and have a fun read, that's a good one. I'd forgotten about the little shot.
The guy's got a suit on and he's putting it in his little lapel pocket.
Yeah, so it's, you know, so if you're
on the go,
right? If you're the next time you're at, say, you know, Sports Authority, whatever, and you're walking up and you see all those little energy packets,
right.
That's kind of what they were shooting for. There is a goo packet that was double bastard. That was a. They had another one too, which was it the energy bar?
They had the energy bar. They had the a Pilsner, which they never do, black Pilsner. Lemon lime was a really funny one. Stone Extreme Lemony Lime. It's fresh-tastic.
Fresh-tastic. Sorry, I just blew right into it. I wasn't ready for fresh-tastic coming from a Stone from a Stone Proc. They also had something that was a light beer at one point too. But so really, either on Hophead's Head Facebook page or on the Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis Facebook page, we listed a couple of them.
Yeah.
So go ahead and take a look at some of these April Fool jokes and get them.
We got to talk to Chaz about if they've ever done one or if they should do one. I think it's great.
I think so too.
You didn't have to do make it up and put the language out there. Put it on your website. Your Facebook and just see what happens.
Yeah, you know, I think you could probably pull something off like that fairly easily, but then to get any legitimate press after that might be a hard thing to do.
Right.
Hey guys, guess what we're doing? So, and then to find out that, you know, that the VC star was totally taken by some joke would be kind of a tough one to come back from, I think. So,
right. So are we giving away some surf?
Well, we've got we have a. That's right. We're just doing a double check. That's okay because it was one of the last minute things, and so like in the last couple of weeks, we've been giving away a T-shirt on our Facebook page, and
that's okay.
So this week, I decided because there were probably, I don't know, 15 or so people who shared or said that they were going to watch this, whether or not they're going to, that's neither here nor there. But we're going to pick from the list of people who said that they were going to come. And then I'm going to actually go over to the Surf Brewing Facebook page as well because they created an event too. And so I'll take the names from there. I'll put the names in with ours, and then we'll pick somebody out of that group. And we have got a really nice LA Aleworks T-shirt that we haven't been able to the last couple of weeks. Either we've been off, or we were playing catch up with some of the swag we had laying around. So that's a large T-shirt. And anyone who shared that or clicked, I'm going to it, and you may have already missed your deadline because I think it closes at 7 o'clock since that's when the show started. So we'll pick from there, and the only caveat to that is that if you've won, and I know that we've only had 4 winners, so I know who's down on that.
If you've won, we have to do all official. If you've won in the last 100 days,
right.
Yeah, you're not eligible to win. Family and friends.
Unfortunately, I've already, like last week was to Jason, who was a friend of ours.
That's exactly who I was talking about.
and then family, because, you know, on the first few shows, that was all who was listening to us was
our family. That's right.
So we've had some, but we're laying down the law right now. Family and friends, boom, you're out. If you're a friend of mine, then we'll do it on the down low, I guess. But so look to our Facebook page, Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis, and you'll see that there. Also, as we're going through the interview here with Chaz coming up, if you've got a question about surf brewing, if you just want to gush over their beers, if you're going to be, you know, a dick and just rag on us, then, you know, hold
that's
your
fine. You call
no, too. I don't want to hear from you. but if you want to, if you got a good question about what's happening or anything new that you've heard down the grapevine, and you want to know if the rumors are true, go ahead and give us a call, 805-744-1900. That is 805-744-1900. And we will take calls at some point down the line. Okay, so the people who are watching us on the video, hello, how are you doing? We are trying to get the live feed up. We've got some technical difficulties, but the VC Buzz live feed should be coming up here in a short order. So so hold on tight there, and then we'll let you know as soon as we get the live feed going for the radio station. I was just looking down the list here as I was going through. One of the notes I made was there was a talk about, and this might be a good time for you to kind of fit in too, Chaz, is NPR did a story last week about craft beer chipping away at big beer. And it was a really interesting article about how people are becoming more aware about what's at the bar. So what kind of beers they're drinking. And specifically what they were pointing out was that people who don't necessarily know what a craft beer is, and they were pointing to let's see, the Brewers Association. Somebody, there was a representative there talking about how when you walk into a bar, you may see 12 taps up on the wall, but in all likelihood, those 12 taps are only coming from maybe two or three different breweries. That right. Shock Top is still a Budweiser product, and Blue Moon is still a Miller product, and on and on and on. So I don't know if this is something that – I mean, we've been really lucky here in California where we don't have to deal with that. I mean, we can find plenty of places to go that are going to have actual local-owned or independently-owned craft beer places. And so it's not such a big deal here, but you know, if you go to a ballpark and you want a craft beer, you've got to be careful. Or you go to a big bar that has, say,
you should be a Giants fan. Anchorsteam at the ballpark, you can't beat that.
Yeah, that. I think a lot of it started from that picture that someone, Yankee Stadium's craft beer station, and I think all the beers on there was like Blue Moon, Batch 19, and I'm trying to. Crispin. Lightning Kugel's Sunset Wheat and Crispin. Mm-hmm. So it was like, hey, wait a minute, that's not fair. You can't say that's a craft beer station, but you know, Miller did. They probably bought it and they did it.
Right. So just talking about this, you know, like what's your feelings about that? I mean, we talk about maybe Lightning Kugel's, and I don't know if you've ever had a Lightning Kugel, but
sure.
You know that, you know, it's an independent one, all of a sudden it's bought by Miller, so what are your kind of feelings on that?
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, the market share that people are looking at, I mean, it's roughly, you know, the craft brewers are trying to break into this 10% market share thing where 10% of the beer bought in the country is craft brewed. And to general public, probably sounds like a very small number. Like there should be room for 10%, but these big brewers are realizing that there's a market for this. So they're trying to cash in on that and be part of that 10%. You know, your Lining Kugels, your Goose Islands that are going to your big brewers, you know, or your the InBev like pale ale that you see at Vaughn's and stuff stacked up on the end.
Stella?
No,
it's like American.
Yeah, pale, it's something American pale. What is it?
And it looks craft, it sounds craft, but
and I think that's the newer thing is not just. You know, like Goose Island and Lightning Kugel's, they've been around, but the newest thing is not just buying breweries, but it's more like creating new breweries that are not even breweries, they're just labels. So you create a label and you make it look like, oh, this thing's been around, it's a craft beer. And that's the latest thing that was kind of been talked about. It's like, hey, is this really a craft beer? Or like, how do you know? Or what, you know, who's this owned by?
Yeah.
Check who it is, check the label.
The lines are definitely becoming a little blurry.
A little blurry, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so when you're looking at the label where they're brewed, you know, we know of several different big brewery places, you know, Budweiser that has breweries throughout the country. And so then we look at one and it's got this nondescript address in Vermont or a nondescript address in New York. Then
right.
You kind of go, what's happening? Because otherwise, if you looked at that packaging, you would have no idea who brewed that. And whether or not that makes any difference to you, and you know, that's a whole nother question. And you know, there was just today I posted this, shared this post about gimmicks that big brewers are using to try and, hey, you know, you need to buy more Miller Lite, whatever it is. And one of our friends posted on that, you know, if the last gimmick that they haven't tried, which I'm guessing they're going to come up with more and more gimmicks, but if they would just put a good tasting beer into that bottle, then their problems would be solved instead of making a vortex bottle or a bigger, a wider mouth can or whatever it is,
right.
You know, a box that tells me that my beer is cold. I know it's cold by touching it, you know? So, I mean, I can get through a lot of this without their help, but it just comes down to whether or not it's a beer that I find tasty. So I know we're all on the same boat and we don't necessarily want to point out anyone here or there, but since I'm on the opinion side of the beer blogging sphere, I can go ahead and say that, you know, I can let my, it's nothing that I haven't said before. So you can certainly find out, but I, you know, those are, if they would just put a good tasting beer into those bottles, then the world would be a better place, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think they can. I don't think it's that they can't, because if they're making these beers on such a huge level in quality control and consistency. I mean, they've obviously.
Right, and Chaz can probably speak to this, that these are some of the most sophisticated brewing systems the world has ever seen. I mean, to be able to make this beer taste the same in every single location is just an incredible thing to do.
Yeah, right. And the people behind them, too. You know, the brewers are that's the epitome of the science behind this.
It's right, just sensories and mm-hmm. everything to be able to taste these and pull out the parts per million that it takes in order to discern whether or not Vermont is brewing a beer that tastes the same as what is there? There must be a Bud brewer in California.
Bad Eyes.
Okay, so yeah, so I mean, whether these two are the same, whether these two taste the same, and right mm-hmm. down to that, and I certainly don't have that palate, but you know, these people who are tasting it for these big companies, they do.
Yeah,
and that's why they get hired.
Yeah. I mean, they got smart early on. I mean, there's a reason why there's. You know, a Miller brewery up the 210, and you get your Bud brewery up just right outside Davis. You know, they know that the beer has to be fresh. It can't sit on a truck. They're not producing all of their beer in Milwaukee and
right.
shipping it out from there. It's all local. I think some of the, you know, lack of putting, you know, I think it's some old business minds thinking about, you know, okay, this is our product. We have, you know, 45% of the market tied up in
so don't mess with it.
Why mess with it? Yeah.
Why mess with it? I see some guys at the window there trying to get in here.
They see all our beer.
We have no beer.
There is no beer here on this table. I'm blocking it.
No, it is. I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing about how you can do this at such a large scale and still be consistent and still do it. Yeah. And they came up with Born on Day, which is like, what? Doesn't make sense. But then if you think about it does make sense because it's like, how fresh is my beer?
So one in every, 20 or 30 different great new things that they have actually turns out to be a better thing for all the rest of us to let us know when the beer is fresh.
But then, I mean, we're, like I said, the craft brew lines are getting kind of blurred. You know, there's the whole big boom in contract brewing. I mean, I have a really good friend of mine is opening a specifically contract brewery in the D.C. area. And there's a huge market for that, and it works out well. I mean, wineries have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, custom crush facilities. Yeah,
where been around, and it works out well because you know, in brewery terms, you can have the best brewing setup, the best all the mechanical end of it can be top of the line, and somebody comes in, a brewer can come in and use that, and he doesn't have to pay for the $3 million setup. Somebody else did, but everybody that brews there benefits from it. And you get a really kind of – you can produce a lot of really good beer that's just labels.
Yeah, I think one of the big Anheuser-Busch – I think actually one of the Bushes, like, you know, B-U-S-C-H, is opening – it's like three or four major contract brewing facilities. I mean, talking $20, $30 million project for people to be able to brew beer on. So there's definitely an interest in that, and that's kind of become the whole new business now, is mm-hmm. if you can do the contract brewing. I personally don't think it's a bad thing that if you can make beer at a contract place, because of what you just said. If you don't have the money to start up and you have this great recipe or you have this great product, you can at least make it, you know, without spending all the money.
Not to be a huge defender of the big macro breweries, those guys are great though. I mean, If it wasn't for them, I'd be brewing on converted dairy equipment.
Right.
You know, everybody, their technology has definitely trickled down to us.
Well, we've had three separate guests who are doing contract brewing or lease brewing or
Gypsy
using
or
space.
Ninja.
Gypsy. Oh, Ninja. That
Ninja
was
brewing the, was the newest
Ninja.
One.
Coming
Ninja in, was pretty good. You come in there at night when nobody's there.
And so we've had several of those people come through. And, you know, when they have control over their product, it's all a good thing, certainly. So we've got we'll be going to a break here in a minute as soon as our board ops come back. But before they come on over here, we've got Chaz Cloud from Head Brewer. I called you Brewmaster earlier, and then it was come back that it was Head Brewer on Facebook or something.
Yeah, I'm a master of nothing.
There you go. No, not master of nothing. But he is the Head Brewer at Surf Brewing. And we've been drinking Mondo's Cream Ale here. Yeah. Been very nice.
It's a good palate cleanser after those heavy,
yeah.
Right.
Some of the heavy stouts we had.
That Almanac Noir.
So we'll definitely get into it. We'll talk about Surf. Getting ready. Taste some of these beers.
Right. And so you should go to surfbrewery.com, take a look at their lineup so you can kind of see what we're talking about. We're going to get to one of my favorite ryes anywhere, County Line Rye.
And we're going to have a discussion about the two different county lines.
The two different county line ryes that are floating around here, right? And I pulled out my Strand T-shirt because that's actually what this beer used to be called. But
I have that same shirt.
But it was.
So do I. It,
you know, I still try to put on an unwrinkled T-shirt even though we're doing radio here. So yeah, I pulled it out and it was like, oh, and then it wasn't quite. I don't know. Evidently, I've gained a couple pounds since Surf opened when I got that shirt, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. So so anyway, so this is going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. So we'll come back. We've got all this great beer.
Yep. Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis on MyBuzzRadio.com.
And now, back to the show.
All right. Welcome back.
And we just got the nod that we are streaming on My Buzz Radio as well. So for those of you who missed the first 15 minutes, you can catch us on a podcast near you through iTunes. And if you're an iTunes user, hey, give us a good review. You know, come on, we're your friends. Give us a five-star rating and then leave a comment, whatever it is, so we can kind of stay up on the top of the new and notables on iTunes.
Even though we don't have a logo on there.
Right, I know. And maybe that's why we're notable, because everything else has a logo. So we kind of stand out.
We have a question mark, which is really nice. So
we stand out that way.
We've got a special guest.
Okay.
As we always do.
Right. And
Mr. Chaz.
Chaz Cloud, and he is the head brewer from Surf Brewery here in Ventura, California. And we just finished up a 22 of Mondo's, which the first time I had that was over at the Sidecar, actually. Because generally I go to County Line Rye or I go to Southswell, something else, or even the Black IPA. So it was paired with corn dogs. And that was one of the best, these little mini corn dogs, that was one of the best pairings. You know, you had the savory, salty kind of corn dog flavor, but then the corn sweetness and the Mondo sweetness, everything was just, Tim did a fan, he's the chef over at the Sidecar, he did this fantastic job with it. And it was one of those things where, oh, I'm the blogger, I'm the writer, I know how to pair this beer. And so right. I almost skipped over it and was going to do the County Line Rye. He said, no, you've got to try this one. So I said, okay, I'll do it for you, kind of humoring him. And it was just fantastic. I mean, it was really great. Have you had the corn dog?
I haven't.
That sounds awesome.
I need to now. That sounds incredible. Yeah, and we use flaked corn in the Mondo's too, which I can kind of see that dovetailing together, something that kind of corn breading on a corn dog and kind of the carbonation would cut through the fat of the meat. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
I can see that being phenomenal.
It was great. So I guess, you know, as for us, we've come to know you through the last couple of years as head brewer at Surf Brewing. What happened? How did you come into this position? So kind of start. Where did you have a chemistry biology background in college? Did you just stumble into homebrewing? What was it?
Yeah, I it's quite a story. I think it's kind of
we've got an hour. Don't worry.
Good. I don't have any formal brewing training. I like to read a lot of books and I like to talk to as many people as possible. I know that the professional brewing community as well as the home brewing community has been super supportive of us. But yeah, I brewed my first batch of homebrew. I was 18 and bought my dad a homebrew kit for Father's Day or his birthday or something like that. And gave it to him because he'd always talked about wanting to homebrew. And I thought it sounded like a lot of fun myself. I always enjoyed cooking. And bought him this homebrew kit and gave it to him, thinking it was going to be the best, you know, birthday present, Father's Day present, whatever. And he's like, well, you can make it. I'd rather just drink it.
Yeah.
So
finished product.
So that sat on a shelf for about a year, and then I went away to college in Pittsburgh, and good friend of mine, Asher, and I decided we're going to tear into this thing and make a batch of homebrew, and that was still in my foggy college memory, the best batch of beer I've ever made, because it was the first beer I'd ever tasted that, you know, I had actually toiled at and worked on. It was just a standard extract porter recipe, and porters are great. They can hide a lot of sins because you get all that kind of dark, roasty malt character. And you know, I mean, I was sanitizing with bleach and all the wrong stuff, not using filtered water. But yeah, just kept chipping away at homebrewing. Did that through college. Moved out to California and kept homebrewing. Went to all grain. Actually, with my buddy who's starting that contract brewery in the D.C. area. But yeah, and all the meanwhile, homebrewing, I was working for a real estate developer, and I would go on my lunch breaks and read books on brewing, just kind of get my mind out of the day-to-day grind of the work, of the job, you know, clear my head and go back to work afterwards, refreshed. And yeah, just kind of soaked up the knowledge. And then all of a sudden, being a real estate developer wasn't such a great job, and I got laid off 2008, leap year. And decided I was, you know, going to really kind of kick back and enjoy where life took me. And the first month of being unemployed, I went surfing every day, literally every day. It was awesome. And then I got a job in a winery, and kind of it just tasting room, not doing production or anything. It was really cool. I got to know the products and experience different flavors and talk to the winemaker, find out what makes what tastes like what it does.
Right.
And then saw a Craigslist post for BJ's was hiring. They were looking for a cellarman and an assistant brewer. So I went and applied. I was, Dave, who's now at Ladyface, interviewed me and hired me and, said I was overqualified for the cellarman position and underqualified for the assistant brewer. And that it was probably going to be a couple months before I would, you know, they got a cellarman, so they're going to kind of try to work me into the assistant brewer position. But it would be a couple months before I got the brew in the big system, which was, I was perfectly happy with. I mean, it was learning, and it was this like intensive, you know, program. You don't have time to screw up. You just do it and get it right. By the end of my first week there, I brewed a batch on the big system.
Nice.
There, which was great, making about 1,000 gallons of beer.
And which one was it?
Which beer?
Which BJ's?
BJ's in Oxnard.
Oxnard, yeah.
But what brand was it? Do you remember?
I think it was a Jeremiah Red. That was a, yeah, actually it probably, yeah, it was. Because that was one that, you know, it's super malty. There's a lot of flavor to that beer. You know, if you have some DMS problems or whatever, it's not really going to show up. If your hopping's a little off, it's not really going to show up on that beer. But yeah, so went through and worked at BJ's for about 4 or 5 months, and then they started, you know, closing down breweries. They had a new brewery in Reno that was producing a lot of their specialty stuff, and then they had some other breweries that were contract breweries, like we were talking about earlier, right, that were making their beer. I mean, they're in 20-some states. Those guys are everywhere. They need a brewery that can produce consistent beer. So business-wise, it made perfect sense, kind of sucked for,
but it definitely sucked for the beer geeks around here, because I mean, I always think of you guys as like the class of BJ's. Like, I don't have a year over there, but I just think of this class of BJ's was like you and Griff and Nick and
Porter.
I'm missing somebody. Yeah. This like class of BJ's where people around here went to see what you guys were doing, because you could probably say it now, you guys weren't exactly following the recipes.
No, a lot of that.
There were a lot of liberties taken with the beers, and they were good.
For the standard beers, yeah, we stuck pretty close to the BJ's recipes, but yeah, a lot of that was Dave's driving force. You know, he's a super creative guy. You know, for mass producing beer like we were, I mean, we had a barrel program going. We were doing Firkins.
There was a lot of stuff that was only available right here in Oxnard.
Yeah.
And so people really liked that. It was cool. It was like you go there and you can taste what's.
And you can walk in and see a brewer at lunch. Yeah, you can talk to people if you have If you had questions, you know, you can ask somebody, which is great. So yeah, worked at BJ's for about 4 or 5 months, and then they shut down the brewery. So I went back to the winery, got into sales, and was kind of struggling with that. I wasn't really I don't know what I wasn't, but I know I wasn't a good salesperson.
It takes a special
kind of. It really makes sense what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. You just have to be a go-getter and really trying to be a good salesperson. That just wasn't in my
mind. And you said your area was like from Santa
Barbara? I covered all of Ventura County to San Francisco.
That's quite the territory.
Wine. Yeah, which is cool. I got to see a lot of the Central Valley and, yeah, a lot of time in the car. Yeah, and then, you know, so I was struggling with that job. You know, it wasn't really in my skill set, and I really, really wanted to make beer. And then I got a text from a good friend of mine that was a mutual friend with Santa Barbara Brewing Company, saying they were looking for a brewer, and that I should call the owner sooner than later. So I called him up and had an interview. Got hired on there. I'm trying to think when that was. Anyway, got hired on there around springish, 2009. Anyway, yeah. Hired on there as a co-brewer with Adam Ball, who used to be at Anacapa Brewing Company here. He's now moved to Outer Banks Brewing Station out in Kildare Hills, North Carolina, doing some really neat beers out there. But yeah, hired on as co-brewers. We brewed a couple batches together, kind of figured out the system, and then he was tied up, still at Anacapa and married to the place. You know, it's a full-time job. And told the owners, you know, he didn't have time to stay up there, but they're in good hands with me. So I was there for about a year and a half, trucking through. I know you guys talked to Kevin Pratt a few weeks ago.
Was Kevin right after you?
Kevin wasn't right after me. There's another guy in between.
Okay, that's right. He did say that.
And I wasn't planning on leaving Bruco. Yeah, it's kind of rough doing that vampire lifestyle. Kevin goes to work 11 at night. Right? I would go in to work at like 3 or 4 in the morning. But it's all pretty terrible.
Yeah, neither one sounds better than the other.
No, it's it was pretty rough. But I wasn't planning on going anywhere. You know, I really wanted to tough that place out, but I had an opportunity for Surf popped up literally in my backyard. I have moved since Surf opened, but I used to be able to ride my bike to the brewery. It was just one of those new brewery, new equipment.
Yeah.
Close to home.
Did you know these guys? Or, I mean, how does Surf kind of...
They had hired Owen Williams? Wilson? Anyway, he's the head brewer now at Ritual Brewing Company out in Redlands. Okay. And he was the brewery consultant that came on that helped the founders of Surf kind of, you know, get the ball rolling. Design the system. You know, they would find a place that looked like a suitable brewery, and he would come out and look at it and say, yes or no. You know, these are going to be the issues. This is what you need for a brewery. And he was the guy that built most of the breweries, or all of them, I'm not quite sure, for BJ's. He was one of the high up guys. So he had talked to Dave. He's at Ladyface, and Dave wasn't going anywhere. So he hit me up one day and said, hey, these guys in Ventura are opening a brewery. Do you mind if I give them your contact information? I had no intentions of going to work for them, but I definitely wanted to hear what was happening in my neighborhood.
Oh, right.
Especially new people coming into the brewing industry, a lot of them, especially if they come from a big kind of corporate background, may not understand how friendly the business is. You know, even if I wasn't going to work for these guys, I wanted to talk to them, you know, try to give them some advice, help them out, and wound up working for them.
I think that's one of the coolest things about just the brewers in our neighborhood. I mean, you go 15 miles or 20 miles down 101 this way, 20 miles up the coast this way, whatever you're doing, there you've got 4 or 5 brewers here who all work together at one point in there, you know, and we're kind of trading spots until everyone found their place, where all of a sudden either the management or the positions, whatever it was, allowed them the creativity and the freedom to do whatever it was. And some places maybe weren't, management maybe wasn't quite ready for a more adventurous beer, whatever it is. But then you give that brewmaster or head brewer the abilities to do that, and then you get some fantastic beer. And so, like, I never knew Adam, but Jason, you, Griff, and even though Kevin is kind of a, you know, I don't know, like not an necessarily like a stepchild into it,
right.
But he's come into this, and everything is all connected.
He was totally adopted into
right.
The
and,
family.
And so I'm guessing that it's the similar across the country, but just here, everyone who knows each other is just this great kind of. You go to a brew festival, and you're going to see Chaz at any one of the other tents around the way, and that's the same way. And Jason from Anacapa has said the same thing too. You know, I'm going to find somebody to pour my beer. I don't get to go around to all these other places and
taste
hang out with these other people. So it is. It's a great kind of friendly family sort of atmosphere amongst all of these head brewers, which just helps everyone else. You know, I mean, we're all certainly you and I are beneficiaries of a cooperative brewing environment.
Yeah. So do you come in there right as they're still kind of in construction and planning, or are they already open? Of course, like anything, there were some delays, just like anything.
Yeah, there were definitely delays. The real, you know, they had been, it was actually really strange because they had, Bill contacted me the first time, and it was literally like less than a week before my wedding. And he was trying to set up like interviews and stuff. I'm like, I'm getting married, so we need to
it's not going
to
happen.
Can we put this on hold for a couple of weeks? And he was, completely on board with that. And that was around middle of July, 2010. And I didn't commit to them until September. I talked to them for a while. Really the crux of where I made that decision was, when they signed the lease on our location.
Right.
They first started talking to me, they didn't have a place. I think that's the 13th, or they looked at 13 other locations before that, before we settled on the final spot.
And it makes sense. You see people going to industrial areas.
Yeah.
It makes sense from a rent perspective and things like that. But you're definitely, by doing that, you're definitely saying we are a destination.
Yeah.
Brewery.
You're making a trip.
Was there ever a downtown? Is there something that says you can't have a brewery in downtown?
Before I came on board, they looked into it, and they talked to the city planning commission, and they said, you know, we're not looking for just another bar. If you're going to be downtown, and not just on Main Street, you know, on
anywhere,
Santa Clara,
downtown
Thompson,
zone, yeah.
You know, just kind of in this downtown area, they wanted a restaurant. And
okay.
They thought about it. And made the smart decision of figuring out that nobody had restaurant experience,
right.
And kind of going into that cold would have been disastrous. So we were looking out in industrial areas. The rent's cheaper,
way cheaper, and you have more room to do stuff.
Yeah, there's room to do stuff.
Larger.
Another, I mean, Ventura isn't a new downtown area. A lot of the buildings they looked at down here didn't have the services we need. They didn't have the electrical loads that a commercial brewery would need. They didn't have the sewer or the water service. So it was it's really nice being in a relatively new building.
Well, so maybe this is it's a question maybe more for you, that as a beer geek, there are so many breweries that are in industrial spots, and that doesn't deter any of us from finding them.
Right.
I'm just trying to think, like the foot traffic as opposed to the casual person coming by, how big of an impact would that have on a business as, say, Joby and I going, okay, we're going to go to surf. It doesn't matter if it's on Main Street or Thompson or wherever
right.
it's at. I'm still going to go there. I mean, the people who are coming to your tap room, I'm guessing, are people who are going to go there anyway. I mean, there's not a lot of foot traffic down on Market Street.
On Market Street, I wouldn't think so. No,
not so much.
It's a destination, for sure.
It's a destination. I mean, there's a lot of offices around there, so we get a pretty good happy hour crowd. And kind of, I try to be finished. Like, with our setup, our breweries, literally behind the bar.
Right.
So I try to be wrapped up by the time we open. But there's a couple times I've stuck around and we get this kind of this happy hour rush of the like 4 to 6 o'clock. And then we kind of slow down a little bit. Then I'll pick up again after that. And so I think we do get a little foot traffic of, you know, somebody gets off work that works around there and they're going to pop by the brewery for a pint or two and
take a growler home. Maybe
exactly. Or take a growler home for dinner. And but yeah, it's, you know, it would have been nice to have the foot traffic. Totally.
Right.
It's,
but the trade off, you'd have to have a restaurant. So.
Exactly.
But another thing I found, the tasting room thing, we were talking to the Aleworks guys, we were talking to Festival Barrel House, and how kind of a brewery can underestimate how powerful a tap room is. And I think Bill mentioned that one time. It was like, you guys thought it was going to be, you know, a little icing on the cake, it was this tap room, and it's a big thing, right?
Right. Well, even Island and AJ from Figueroa. I mean, all of this, anywhere that has that tap room, you know, that's there's so much that you're not having to pay transportation on that keg. So it's
and it's a great format for the beer too. Right. You don't have to worry about your beer sitting around somewhere. It's the tap room, tasting room beer is the freshest.
Right, and just the fact that you're surrounded by the brewery on top of it. I mean, there's a certain you can't underestimate the experience of sitting there. You know, I mean, if it was if it was a gray wall and you didn't get to see any of the brewery, you wouldn't be getting as much people in there. But when they can see all those great, you know, the shiny stainless steel tanks, and everyone just feels like they're in the middle of it too.
And that's one of the nice things of coming into the surf organization. You know, we have founders that didn't work in the brewing industry before, and a lot of that stuff, you know, as a professional brewer and just kind of beer geek before that, you take that for granted of seeing the mash tun.
Right.
Okay, that's what that vessel does, or what a fermenter is, and just kind of what goes into the beer, and it kind of creates a connection for people.
I mean, I've seen, I don't know, thousands of those things, and I still see it, and I'm like, oh, shiny object, shiny stainless steel tank. I mean,
right.
I go to a winery.
Your spirit lifts as you walk in.
It does.
You see the
equipment. Something is happening. Something is being made, and something's being stored right there. And it does. It does add that. So speaking of the somethings, what are we drinking right now, Chad?
This is the
sneak preview here.
I just finished the sneak preview of the of our strawberry wahini. So this is actually going. This isn't even in kegs yet. This will be keg tomorrow. And we're going to release this weekend. This is our Wahini is our American wheat ale that we kind of work with local fruit. In the fall and this past winter, we've done a lemon, which we teamed up with James from Ventura Limoncello.
And, that was really good.
He taught us a lot of their techniques for how they process the lemons. So you apply that to a beer with local Limonera lemons. We did that through the fall and winter. And last year, and they asked us to do it again this year, we're doing a strawberry version for the Oxnard Strawberry Festival, which is May 19th-ish, whatever that weekend is, kind of middle of May. Cool.
So, and this will be the exclusive beer of the festival?
This will be the exclusive beer at the festival. And last year we did 2 batches, and they took about half of it. This year we did 3, and we may even do a 4th and try to bottle it.
Oh, wow. So can we get this at the brewery?
We can get you'll be able to get this at the brewery tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
Yeah.
Sweet. We got a day early.
Yeah, we did get a day early.
Nice.
And the first thing I noticed was like when you popped the cap on the growler was just like this beautiful strawberry aroma just filled the room. It was just it was just all sitting in there, like couldn't wait to get out. And
it's definitely
it's
a
really
strawberry
good.
Beer.
It's not sweet, though.
It's not
super sweet. It's sweet, but it's not.
Right.
Cloyingly sweet, I guess.
Your lips aren't sticky after
that. No,
It's right, so refreshing. If you're thinking Lindeman's, like strawberry soda, that's not what this is.
Strawberry lambic
or
any of those.
This is a really nice wheat base with, and that's probably where it comes from, is that it's a beer first, and then it has this nice strawberry flavor in it. So anyone who's going to the Strawberry Festival, big festival around here, you know. Evidently, we have some strawberry fields.
Yeah, we've got a few strawberries.
there's a few of them around here. So make sure you, I've seen glasses from years past and they're generally, you know, whatever they are, 4 ounce spacers right. or whatever it is, but can you get a bigger glass?
I think
of
you
that?
Get a pint, right?
I think
you
get a pint.
Or 12
yeah.
ounce. I'm not sure.
Yeah. They're, pretty much what's nice about this year is last year we had to help them with staffing, which is really tough because we have pretty minimal staff
as it is.
And this year they're literally just buying kegs from us. So I'm not sure how they're going to be serving it. I know last year they did a pint and I think they actually had like a cut strawberry that they served.
Oh, nice. On the, that's a nice little touch
on the rim.
And it may not be called serve, right? It's just going to be
yeah,
like,
I'm not sure.
It might be just Oxnard.
Yeah. That'd be
strawberry.
A good bill question. They're not giving us a title right. sponsor.
But regardless, the strawberry beer that's there.
Strawberry
is
beer at the festival.
Made by Surf Brewery.
Made by Surf Brewery.
All right, that's
yeah.
good enough.
With local strawberries.
With local strawberries. Nice.
So I'm pouring one of my faves here.
Yeah, you're skipping right to the counting line.
Was there something else that I was supposed to pour before this?
No.
Okay. So
You can pour counting line rye all day.
I'm a huge fan of this beer. I love rye beers in general. The dry. The dry finish, accentuate the hops. I don't know, the rye flavor, you
yeah.
know, all of it. It just, especially in a pale ale, you know, and I even like it, in a double IPA.
Yeah.
You know, you throw a bunch of rye in there.
Hop rod rye.
Mm-hmm. All that kind of, so, the first time we had this and we were telling the story before the show, we're talking about it, reminiscing 2 years ago. So it'd be 2 years ago in June.
June 8th.
Okay. So 2 years ago. So Surf Brewery isn't even 2 years old yet. And it's, I mean, the Ventura County definitely is, you know, like the local hotspot. But I see postings for Surf Brewery stuff in down into LA County.
Oh, yeah.
And going north too. So if people aren't here in Ventura, do you know where else that they... do you have a beer finder on the website?
I think they do, actually.
Do
Surf Beer Offsite. Yep, it's called Surf Travel. I'll help you out, Chaz. Don't worry.
Great, thanks.
Search by city or zip code. So,
and you can get it.
I mean, just right down the street at Clark's Liquor, we can get it. So it actually has like a little GPS thing that pulls up. So really cool. Definitely tons of Ventura places, as it should be.
So this was one of your first batches that you brewed on this brand new system you're talking about. How you move in, one of the great things about coming to Surf was that it was this brand new open, you know, blank slate kind of thing. And so you end up brewing this rye. So
yeah.
Take us from there. Tell us what came out and kind of how it's evolved to what it is today.
Yeah. We did during our construction, I did a lot of test batches. Pretty much I was brewing a couple times a week, just trying to nail down the beers. Did a lot of Mondos, a lot of Caroline Rye, a lot of Surf, did our Vienna Lager.
Were these on like a small, like, pilot
batches? Like
a homebrew system.
Old Moore beer, 1500 kind of gravity
yeah,
fed
saying, yeah.
Tier system that we actually brought from Bruco. It was rusting in the shed the whole time I worked there. And the guy after me didn't want to use it, so we, you know, bought it from them.
Do you want this thing over here?
There's a beer sculpture
in
the back.
There's a bunch of stainless sitting back there.
Right.
So it's like, how many gallons would that, or how many?
We were doing 10-gallon batches.
10-gallon batches, yeah. Okay.
So we brewed a lot. And what's actually kind of strange, with all of our beers, the County Line Rye has not, the recipe formulation hasn't changed from that last, once we decided this is what we're going with. The Mondos has changed, Surf's changed. Southswell for like the first year was a work in progress. Each batch was a little,
right.
a little different.
There was hops.
It was finding the hops and finding how to use them. But
yeah.
the rye, we kind of settled on this and it's like, wow, this is what we want. But yeah, so we get our new equipment and that first brew, been looking forward to it for, you know, 8 months, just ready to tear into this thing. It was great. You know, it's 15 barrel brew house at Surf. I came from Santa Barbara Brewing Company, 15 barrel brew house. So, you know, recipe scale in terms of quantities, what I'm thinking of, it should have been pretty close. And I get about halfway into the first brew, which took 16 hours, which is a miserable day. halfway through and running off, and I didn't quite know where to stop the runoff on, like, what kind of troub losses and stuff I was going to get in the kettle. So the first batch of rye that came out, the mash was a little hot because I didn't know how much heat was going to be lost in that, so it wound up being a little more malty and sweet. And it was about 7% alcohol. We're shooting for 6 with this. So we finished it. There was nothing wrong with the beer, but it wasn't what I brewed on the pilot system. Right. It wasn't to spec. But we didn't.
I don't think anybody knew that night.
No, I don't think so either.
No, because it was tasty. Right?
Yeah, but we decided we weren't going to dump it out. Now, talking to the guys at Telegraph, they said they dumped their first 7 batches, and which makes perfect sense. You know, right. There's going to be stuff that's off, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's like, this is perfectly good beer. It's just not what it is. So we called it our strong rye, and put it out there. And I still get people, when are you going to do the strong rye again?
Called the Strand?
We had first came out with it. It was Strand or the Strand, you know, rye pale ale.
So we both have collector shirts of
yeah.
Because I joined your club that night,
right?
And so did Curtis, I think.
The grand opening
club, which was really cool.
Yeah, cool. What was kind of strange was through actually working at the winery, I knew Rich, one of the founders of Strand Brewing Company down in Torrance. And so we get a nice letter from them saying, please,
cease and desist.
Please don't call this the Strand. So, you know, back to the friendly side of the business. So you just change the name. You know, you guys were established, and we don't want confusion either. So it came out with County Line Rye. Because when we first opened, you were trying to pick local surf spots. So you got the Strand and Mondo's and yeah.
Yeah, if I didn't have the shirt that said the Strand, I wouldn't remember that at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so every time I pull that shirt out and I look at it, and I go, oh yeah, that's what's going on.
It's called, yeah.
But County Line Rye is a name that just flows.
Yep.
And
this is very good, by the way.
Right.
It's been a while since I've had it, and I can see why it's your favorite, Curtis.
And so then back to the beer pairing. So over at Sidecar, they have this whole course of it, and this was paired with a sage waffle that had bacon bits in the waffle. The maple syrup was infused with bacon, and it had this giant piece of fried chicken right on top of it that was sage infused. That is by far my favorite. I mean, everything was just fantastic the whole way through, but this one was. That's what it is, you know. If somehow you can make a sage bacon infused Belgian waffle and pair it with this thing, that's all you have to do. That you won't want anything to eat the rest of your life. I'm telling you.
It's, so that first incredible. Batch is that one batch, and then
that was one batch. So we brewed the rye, and then we brewed our first iteration of the Wahini, which was actually a Belgian wit.
Right.
Following that, and it's like, okay, we got to get a good batch of rye in tank. So in those first two batches, I was able to kind of figure out what the machinery and equipment was going to do. And from there, we've been pretty consistent.
That's actually. Cool.
So even, you know, coming from like a homebrew background, being able to get a higher efficiency out of my my system is a good thing. You know, like, hey, all right, now I can – but – you know, when this is what you're shooting for is this dry sort of beer, then, you know, mashing in at a high temp and getting all this extra sugar isn't necessarily what you were looking for is what you've been saying all along. But, it's hard for me to stop gushing about this because it really is. It's one of my favorite rye beers. If I'm going to do a rye, this is the one that I'm going to pick out.
How much rye is in this?
Like trying to think the math, it's between 20 and 25%.
So it's a pretty significant amount.
Yeah, it's enough to make it a backbreaker. It's
as far as brewing.
Yeah, it's becoming one of our. It actually, I think last month it was our most popular beer, which is great. I mean, I personally love this beer. This is always on tap at my house.
Nice.
Always keep it around. It's a backbreaker. All that rye, we use rice hulls, which get heavy. the mash just gets gummy, and we don't have any mechanized stirring in our mash tun, so it's
all. So you've got your paddle.
It's my paddle. Yeah.
It's a good workout.
Yeah.
It is an incredible workout.
I go up to like 15% in a homebrew batch, because if I go any higher than that, then I can't sparge through that, because it's just this giant, it's almost like a plug in the bottom of that mash tun.
And, yeah, it gets.
And for you going, you're talking, how much is in your mash tun at that point?
This beer is probably about 1,000 pounds of grain. So dry weight,
right.
And then what does it soak in?
Yeah, I have no idea. But the thing with rye, so this beer is way harder to stir than our Southswell, which probably
is a huge
1,400 pounds of grain in there. The Southswell, the barley stays nice and floaty, and everything just kind of is this homogenous mixture. The rye just always, even before sparging or runoff or vorloff, it just wants to compact and just sit at the bottom. It just gets heavy, but it's a good workout.
It is.
I don't have a gym membership.
We appreciate your efforts, because it's a damn good beer.
Right. We've got a couple minutes before we go to the break here. What do we have? We've got the black.
Got the black IPA. Double IPA.
Let's talk about that one real quick before we go to break, and then we'll be able to kind of taste and talk, and then when we come back for last call, we can kind of finish up on that one.
Yeah.
So what makes it a black IPA?
We, when we first were founded, when we were discussing the recipes we're going to do, we wanted to do stuff that, we wanted to do popular beers. I mean, you obviously want to sell beer, but we didn't want to do straight pale ale. So the rye pale ale.
Yeah, you didn't do like a cookie cutter selection.
Yeah.
It was
I mean, Sierra Nevada has California locked down on pale ales. Double IPAs, there's just so many of those. So you have to differentiate yourself. And that was kind of right around when the black IPA fad was starting. So we're like, okay, let's do a black IPA. But I didn't want to go super, I talked to other brewers we just brew our IPA and use Cinnamar and dye it black. You get the IPA flavor and aroma and body just dark.
But you don't get the roasty, right?
Right.
Exactly, yeah. We wanted a little bit of that. So there's a lot of dark Carafa malts in there, a little bit of caramel. Our first test batch we did was pretty much just like a really hoppy dry stout, but that had way too much body to it. It's a difficult recipe to formulate because the malt gets in the way of the hops so much. And pretty much I had to, acquiesce that was how it's going to be. And then you start working with how the hops complement the malt. It can't be a really super hop forward, hop bomb style IPA where, you pucker after you drink it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to try to get the malt to work with the hops.
Yeah, there's definitely a line between black IPA and Russian Imperial Stout or Imperial Stout. And I don't think the line's that big because sometimes you could be on either side of it.
Right. Yeah, and one of the things that come to mind whenever I drink a good black IPA is if you have a really good cup of black coffee. And so you've got this really great roasty flavor, and it finishes clean and kind of citric. There's an acid in it that kind of cleanses the palate. And so that's what what I expect from a black IPA is that same kind of thing where you've got this really great malt backbone. The roasty flavors are there in your nose for sure. And then as it kind of washes back, it's, the hops play that cleansing palate on there. And whereas like an Imperial Stout is, maybe roast and everything else and chocolate, but then it's such a coating flavor too.
Yeah, didn't want that long
finish. Yeah, you want to be careful not to get that. But one thing I always wonder is how come you guys never named it?
It's tough to come up with a name.
For the black IPA?
For the black IPA, we did. We wanted to do Dawn Patrol was our original.
There are some Dawn Patrol posters and t-shirts around,
yeah,
right?
Originally, if you look around, if you go into the boardroom at the brewery, there's some Dawn Patrol stuff up there. Oh, yeah. But there's a brewery, beer called Dawn Patrol. So then we looked into Surf Patrol, and there's a guy that had T-shirt rights to that. So we're like, okay, we won't do that. So we're like, just
it's all friendly until you use somebody's name.
Just call it Surf. Right. You know, I'm like, what? Why not call it C Street? So like, well, Anacap is C Street Wheat, so you can't. You know, it's
so like, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes ago, I said we had about 2 minutes. Imagine that. We just kept on talking. So we better go to a break. We'll come back for last call.
Yeah, we'll come back and do some South Pole and last call.
Take a look at this this black IPA.
And now, back to the show.
On that note, we're back with Chaz.
At some point, it goes, good ink.
I know, we never make the cue on that. I never. Ever. Never. I think that'll be like one of those cool things where we never are on cue.
I can go with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I have to, or we just play the song
we
again.
We just play the music over again.
And then we don't have
this
to.
This is what happens when you give the board ops strawberry.
Right. So you give them the leftover beers, and then you never know what happens. So before we get going, I do want to say that I do want to mention how I'm getting home tonight. Is yes. We're driving, and it's a great DD driving service. They also take you to Lakers games. They'll take you to they did a Dodger run this morning, yeah. And so all kinds of stuff. And if you've got a parent who can't make it to a doctor's appointment or get to the grocery store, or whatever, they're going to do it for you. Me. Since I'm an able-bodied driver, generally, except for after this show, it is great because I make an appointment or I can call them up and in about an hour they'll come and get me. So WeirdDriving.com, take a look at it, a designated driving service. They come and get you. They drive you and your car home. And
that's
then
right.
You wake, and then you wake up in the morning, your car is there. You
no walk not, of shame.
Your head may not feel good, but when you walk out the door to go to work and your car's right there and you don't have to figure out where it's at, that's when it's a priceless moment. So give a look to weirddriving.com. That's W-E-R-E, driving.com. And if you book them, tell them you heard about it here.
Yeah,
let them know because at some point, if they don't hear that, I mean, they hear every week that we love them or that I do. But if they don't hear that other people love them, then I'm going to.
Yeah, we got to keep them around.
Right, I know. We got to keep them driving me home safe every
they'll
week.
They'll pick you up from the brewery too.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and that's
brewery,
that's
your
right.
Favorite bar.
So like I'm gonna we'll end up walking back over to Barrel House 101 after the show, and I'll sit there for a half hour, whatever, have another beer.
They can get me
or bourbon. Yeah, bourbon. Or wherever you're at. So
I didn't mean to get you off track there. Sorry.
Surf brewery. I know. All of a sudden, what happened to me? I don't know. I flashed out there for a sec. But so give them a call and find out what they're doing. Now, we just finished the Black IPA, and we were just talking about how it was something that maybe an innocent bystander or somebody brand new to the beer biz doesn't realize is that it's hard to name a beer.
Right.
Because somebody's got the same idea or the brewery's got a similar name or whatever, and it's happened throughout history.
Yes.
And most recently, like the big case is Budweiser versus Budvar.
Yeah.
And in this this little Czech Pilsner beer.
Right. Then they win the lawsuit, then it's being challenged again.
Right,
it's like,
and so it's going back and forth.
It'll never be over.
So it's a tough one. So we've got so we were just talking about the Black IPA style and what's its name, and the name is Surf. So you can't.
So is it Surf, or is it just Surf Black IPA?
Surf Breweries Surf.
I guess that's how it would appear on your menu, right? Surf.
Yeah, no, Surf Black IPA.
Little double speak.
Yeah, Surf Black IPA.
And
it doesn't matter what it's called; it's really good.
Right. Yeah. Whatever. If it's coming in black and it's a hoppy black one, then you know it's Surf.
Yeah, I have to say two
Black IPA.
Two really good Black IPAs. I hate to. Talk about somebody else's brewery right here, but Island and Surf are like two of my favorites, and they're right here locally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so
which is awesome.
And generally, if I want something that's hoppier, I'm doing this one.
Yeah, this
here.
One's definitely hoppier.
And then something a little more on the citric. I don't like cleansing on that one.
Yeah,
Island IPA. But it is so great that we've got a choice between really great IPAs.
Yeah, two
black
great
IPAs
black IPAs
around here.
Never happens.
So what is your opinion on this? So I just call it Black IPA because that's kind of what everyone calls them. I prefer, generally, I would really prefer to be called a Cascadian Dark Ale.
Right.
Because I think what is that?
The shoots.
Yeah. I think maybe were they the first ones to do it? I mean, I generally I'm against oxymorons, and so that's exactly. why. But I just do it because out of habit, and that's what people understand.
Yeah. The when we enter this in competitions, it goes in as an American dark ale or American black ale, just to show that it's a little, you know, it's not the little more than getting a beer poured here. Thank you. You know, it's not, yeah, black eye. Well, yeah, we had talks about this when we were trying to name the beer and during inception of the brewery. And it's one of those just kind of, you know, what's going to speak to the people buying it? What gives them an idea? And we decided black IPA works for that, even though it is an oxymoron, but you do understand it's a hoppy beer that's black.
It's black, yeah.
It's just the most simple nomenclature we can come up with.
And actually, the shoots, the CDA, the Cascading Dark, that one confuses people who don't know. So kind of playing into what Chaz is saying, it's like, what the heck does that mean?
Yeah.
Cascading Dark Ale,
and that's probably why I just default to black IPA. Although there's plenty of, you know, just I've learned to kind of go with it, you know, to flow with calling them black IPAs. But what we have now is not an oxymoron.
No, this is a double
IPA, and this is the Southswell, and this one has had a few kind of. I don't know, variation. So is this Southswell version 3.0? What do we have here?
3.5?
I didn't even count them. Yeah, there was, like I said earlier, the whole first year of the Southswell was a work in progress. One of the main driving forces that really helped me out with this beer a lot was Eric Butthollister. I went up there and bring him growlers, try this, what do you think? And he kind of gave me some pointers. We've been brewing it the same way for probably the last 6 months.
And I think bottles came out.
Bottles came out.
Because you didn't have it in bottles before that.
We didn't have it in bottles.
And you didn't do growlers either before.
We're still, this beer is, you know, Armando's has like 4 pounds of hops in it. The Southswell is like 65 pounds of hops.
Right.
It takes a ton of hops. And what's tough is that they're all imported. So the whole idea of Southswell is that it's Southern Hemisphere.
Right. Some of my favorite hops, too. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. The flavors that you get from
the Nelson Sauvignon.
And you're using like Galaxy. Actually, you're the first one that ever told me about Galaxy. I never even knew that hop existed.
And that kind of came out of being a new brewery. We couldn't get Citra. I wanted Citra for the black IPA, and they're like, "Well, we got this Galaxy. It's kind of like it. It's not the same.
It's not like it. Yeah,
they're totally different."
Well, and I think that's for anyone who's visiting, traveling up and down too. Oh, here's another West Coast double IPA.
Yeah, right.
No,
yeah.
This
no,
is not a West.
It's not another a West Coast.
Another West Coast double IPA. Yeah, this has all of the mindset of a West Coast double IPA, but the hop flavors and the aromas on this are. You know, minus the pine, minus the grapefruit. Mm-hmm. This is some.
This is all tropical.
Right. Tropical, yeah.
Yeah.
And the bitterness, the bitter finish is just like, it's incredible. It's it's 100 IBUs, right? Or 90.
Depending on how you calculate it.
Right? Say the website says what?
103.
Yeah, 103, right.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there, but.
I love it.
It's by the threshold.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I can remember some of these versions before this that were a more copper color, maybe, you know, and so they were a little more sweet, and this one has a really nice kind of, it's a nice amber color, and then it leads to, you know, as you're looking at this, not expecting necessarily a sweet finish, but there's a definite malt backbone that holds this up, but it finishes dry on top of it too. So, you know, I mean,
this beer,
the fermentation on this had
typically
to have
been, finishes below 2 degrees Plato, which is pretty dry.
For a home brewer like me, what is that?
You got to convert 10, that into 10,
there
okay. you go.
Very good.
Gravity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And 9% alcohol, are we pretty close on that?
Right. Dead on 9. Yeah, it's and that kind of comes from an article I read from Matt Brindleson. Said, you want to make hoppy beers, back off on your malt and let the hops show through. Mm-hmm. The sweetness of your malt's always going to drown out your hops. So if you can make a really dry beer, you're going to be able to showcase hops.
And having said that, you can't go too much one way, though, right? You can't go too much hops and not enough malt.
Yeah, I think that
you
was
sort of hop water then.
I think that was the case of Oshaka.
Okay.
Which was taking all these like double IPA brewing techniques and doing a 4-8% beer.
Okay.
I loved it. And then we were featuring it as a single hop. Some of the hops showed through, some didn't.
So this is a beer, Oshaka, which I generally, I don't like extra pale ales just because I feel like they're just one-sided hops. But if you want,
that was the idea.
But if you want, like I want a little more malt in it, kind of a little more balance. But if you want to know what a hop flavor and bitterness, what a hop does, then you search out these one hopped extra pale ales, which. I'm trying to think. Maybe 6-7 months ago, I had my first Oshaka, and this is one of these ones where, you know, when you log into Untappd, you've got to pick which one it is.
Yeah, which
you
one
know,
did
is
you
this
have?
Is this whatever hop variety it is, and it's a great great way to learn what these flavors are doing as a home brewer or as just a general taster, and then on top of it, you end up featuring these at the tap room on the hop rocket. So not only is it all of those hops and then it's shot through another infusion of hops before you get to drink it. So it's whatever the hop is just like to the nth degree. And it's a great way to experience that.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's even from a brewer's standpoint possible, but it would be awesome if you could have, I don't know, 4 or 5 of them side by side. Without them being, you know, old or
that was the main.
And that would be awesome if you could do like a hop tasting. You know,
right.
Here's what this hop does to each of these beers.
By making these super hop forward beers, they just fade so fast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's anything that
right.
Yeah,
so just Keller has that. Like
he
had this. There were like I think 10 of them, and they were all Warrior, Tomahawk, all different hops, same base beer. He even made one that was just called 10, where he took all 10 of them and threw them in the beer. I made it, but it was a great way to demonstrate hop characteristics. Yeah. Like you do a tasting with somebody, and you do all of those side by side, and it's like, wow, you can really tell what each hop does.
Yeah, we did a Nelson Sauvin version of the Oshaka.
That was really good.
That was definitely a beer you couldn't have at lunch and go back to work. You would stink of hops.
Well, and then if you don't have any of these beers that we've been talking about locally, you can also try the Sam Adams, the 48 Latitude. And so a lot of times those will come all one hop. And so can taste those. But you know, you run into the same thing. If you're going to keep one of those out until the next one comes through, then you're losing a lot of the aroma and everything else. But if you take really good notes, then maybe you can kind of, or you've got a really great sensory memory, then you can do it. But
What hops are in the Southwell?
Southwell is Galaxy, Nelson Sauvin, Racal, and Motueka.
Oh, Motueka, yeah.
So it's a cornucopia.
I only remember Motueka because I was at Sierra Nevada and we got to use that.
I was going
to
say because the only one that I recognized out of that was the Nelson.
Yeah.
And so I mean And generally, I like to think that I'm in tune to the brewing world. But I'm like, wait, what? There's 4 hops there that I don't even know about.
That was kind of what we wanted to play with on this, is showcase different flavors. You know, you go drive up and down the coast. You know, most of the people coming to our brewery aren't – I mean, we get a lot of people from out of town, but they're not from far out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you're in California and you've had a lot of double IPAs if you're doing brewery tours.
Yeah, but you've had like Cascade and Simcoe and
Chinook. Chinook and Resin Pine.
Right. Which are good, don't get me wrong.
Oh, wait, no.
I love my California IPAs.
Oh, a resin. Yeah.
But I do love a tropical IPA like this. It's really good.
Yeah, and I thought it was, it's kind of a fun way to go and differentiate us.
So, and as a surfer yourself, I mean, this has this kind of double meaning too, as a south swell coming through Ventura County itself, just the geography of the land, which is interesting. So, I mean, as somebody who's just learning to surf, I still don't know necessarily, you know, these summer storms or these winter storms, whatever's kicking this up. So a south swell, for people who aren't familiar with geography, Ventura County actually shoots out west into the ocean. And for the first, and I've only been, I mean, this summer I'll have been a California resident for 4 years. And so for the longest time I was telling people, oh yeah, we're north of LA. No, we're directly west of LA.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, it just shoots straight out. And so we've got this big point here in Ventura County where, you know, the waves are coming from the north, you know, for these winter storms. Mm-hmm. And then the south swell. So just to kind of geek out on the surfing side, when do we get south swell?
So that was when we originally came out with south swell. I wanted to do a double IPA that featured the southern hemisphere hops that we're not really accustomed to around here. And they're harvested in our summer. So the idea was that this was going to be our summer seasonal that's now year-round because we couldn't stop making it.
Yeah. The demand for it was huge.
Yeah, we couldn't stop making south swell.
Such a great beer.
So it was going to be a summer seasonal. It's like, okay, we're going to get all these southern hemisphere hops when they're super fresh and make this double IPA and call it south swell because in the summer around here is when you get those like southern hemisphere winter storms that just drive these monstrous, just beautiful waves up our way, and you get a nice south swell in Ventura County, and you know nobody shows up to work that day.
Yeah, as a non-surfer, I'm just kind of learning all this stuff. And I've been here 6 years, so I can't. I'm right behind you, Curtis.
Well, yeah. So like, you know, I generally stay away from the beaches in the wintertime because I fear anything that's coming out of the north as a giant big swell that's just going to throw me away, you know. So I go out in the summertime when things are generally a little flat. But that was, you know, so I guess my first, not even thinking of hops, was just that this was a summer swell, like from surfing and not necessarily from southern hemisphere hops.
Right. We also use the crystal malts in this are from Chile.
From Chile, oh, nice.
Yeah, so southern hemisphere.
So we tried to get southern hemisphere,
everything
yeah.
we could from the southern hemisphere.
Yeah. So it kind of an obvious question, but the guys who started surf, are they big surfers? Is it – or was it just kind of meant to be because you're here in Ventura? And
I think it was more of playing to the local culture. I know Bill surfs occasionally. Elise that works at our tasting room – probably wins the award for most time in the water. I'm probably a close second.
Okay. So definitely some surfers on the staff.
Yeah, definitely had a nice week this week. I got to brew a batch of beer yesterday and go surfing today.
So. There you go.
Sweet.
And, no complaints.
Yeah. So it was just kind of Ventura culture.
Exactly. Yeah. It's what, I don't know. Yeah. And I mean, it was a, there's definitely a, do you surf question in the interview.
So if you say no, are you out?
So the tap room at Surf Brewery, I just saw on Facebook they posted some new signs, and it's kind of an homage to say the MASH signs, you know, on the TV show MASH,
right?
You know, this way. So they've got a couple signs pointing to Mondo's, or they've got a sign, a surfboard cutout pointing to Mondo's, another one to C Street. When you're out surfing, what is it? Where are you going?
Depends what I'm looking for. I mean, C Street right here, you know, we have world-class surf literally in our backyard. Right here, you got Rincon. But it depends what I'm looking for. If I want to go out and, you know, catch great waves, I go to C Street. Most of the time, I just want to go out and kind of relax, clear my head, and just, you know, have fun. Doesn't matter how great the waves are. I want to go out and, you know, catch a couple. So I tend to follow the beach breaks up and down the coast. Yeah.
I just learned of Mondo's last spring, so about a year ago. So that's kind of where I'll go, and I'll just hang out, and, you know,
Mondo's is fun.
It's yeah, my big board. It's, you know, something that's going to hold me that I can stand up on and still float. Yeah. It's all great. So
yeah, people are nice there. And
right. Yeah.
Laid back.
Yeah. Nice. I got a jawing as they say, at County Line one time when there's like 1,000 people out in the surf, and this guy was really pissed off that I cut him off about, I don't know, maybe 10 yards out. Come on, you know, my wife's from Hawaii, and I've been out to Waimea, and I've been on Sunset, and I've been all of these great places. Like, dude, this is not a place to get all pissed off at me. I mean, I felt like a Point Break guy where Flea was going to, or not Flea, it's what's his name, was going to come out and start busting me up. But I'm like, dude, come on.
Always remember there's more waves coming.
Right, right. I know, and my surfboard has blue flames on it. You can tell that I don't know what I'm doing. Please, would you just look out for me?
Right.
I'm going to run over you. So anyway, Chaz, this has been I've had a great time tonight, seriously. And so anybody who's listening, go to surfbrewery.com.
Right.
And if you're driving up and down the 101,
you should definitely stop by.
Especially anyone who's coming in to visit. This is, it's one left as you're coming in from the south. It's,
it depends which exit.
Right. I mean, you're talking like two turns, really, seriously.
Yeah. So, Chris, you're not from here. So those of us that are kind of from here, we say it's where Chuck E. Cheese is. And then you just keep going down a little bit and make a left.
Okay. So if you know where
Chuck E. Cheese is.
We're definitely kid-friendly, but you can drop your kids off at Chuck E. Cheese and go to the brewery.
Right. And that's the other thing, too. So if you come in, they've got a great tap room. You can sit there.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have food trucks.
Yeah. That was like Wednesday through Sunday? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Really good, actually. Escabeche. And I was also going to say you have your Hop Rocket on Fridays.
Usually.
And then usually you have a firkin of something, right?
Yeah, Cass? We tap firkins on Tuesdays. That was a bit of a learning curve. took a while to get people into them.
Yeah.
And there was a couple times where it's like I come in Monday to go put on the new firkin, and
you still have
the last
old firkin.
One still has beer in it.
Mm. Yeah.
But now they're like selling out by Fridays.
So sweet.
Yeah, they've had some really cool ones lately. I had a, it was like vanilla, I think it was pipeline with vanilla.
Oh, we did our coconut.
Coconut pipeline. That was really good.
I'd say I did a vanilla one, but we haven't tapped it yet.
So you've got, and these
firkins, had the vanilla.
And these firkins
the
are talking, you're talking like 7 gallons of beer?
10.8.
So okay.
And beer engine and everything. It's right. Really cool. It's you've never had a cask beer, you got to try it.
Right. And so you end up having this low carbonation. The malt just blows through everything.
Yeah.
It sits in your palate. You can taste everything as it's going.
And they always have something fun in it. Like you had a South Swell with...
Yeah, I try not to get too crazy.
Yeah.
Usually it's a lot of hops that I'll
That's
throw
fine.
In there with the
I'm
Sasswell
okay with that.
Or Black
the
IPA. Found our porter. I've been doing a lot of coconut. We did vanilla one. Did a couple with just hops, and people have been...
So, like, you're actually dry hopping in the cask.
Yeah, yeah. There are whole leaf hops, which is one of the really nice things. We have a fully stocked homebrew shop.
Right.
So when I'm filling firkins, I just walk out front and grab stuff.
Yeah, and it's I mean, one of my favorite things to do is get a beer... And then walk to the homebrew shop, which I think is the coolest thing. And then just kind of look at all the stuff I want to buy, but I don't know.
And then
I should buy stuff. Sorry,
but then what you can do is take a look at on the website. So you pull it up on your phone, and you see what they've used to do that, and then stick your nose in the bins, open the bin,
you got everything right there.
Yep.
Whiff, 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 back and forth,
And you look at the little
kind of get a feel for what the grains are that you're using. You're not going to be able to do that with the hops because they're all. You know, nitrogen packed, whatever it is,
you know,
to keep them fresh for jokers like me.
But if you buy it, it's only a couple bucks.
Yeah. Take, you know, buy an ounce of hops for, you know, $4, $5, whatever.
Yeah, and you guys are really good on the homebrew shop. I know you guys post when you get, you know, new hops in and they have grain special. I mean, we're really happy that you guys, it's the only homebrew shop around here.
Right.
Yeah, we kind of did the homebrew shop just out of necessity that, you know, there was there was one before that you know, I went to when we were doing our pilot batches, and they just didn't have the stuff I needed.
Yeah, I think we all know who you're talking about.
But. Yeah. but we decided to, you know, we just did it out of necessity because they're from the next closest ones in Woodland Hills.
Right.
After that is Slow.
Right.
And there's just a need. There's... People are going to be asking us for ingredients anyway. Might as well
do it. So we were kind of joking about Chuck E. Cheese, but you guys are on 4561 Market Street.
Right.
I like to say the left-hand side says Suite A. They can find you on surfbrewery.com. Mm-hmm. You guys have a Facebook page, Twitter. I know you guys are all over it.
And everything. So you'll be able to find them for sure. And definitely go check out whenever they have a Hop Rocket or a Birkin. And, you know, those are things that I don't get to go to nearly often enough just because I live in Camarillo. And so, you know, driving up, getting a beer, and then going back down generally on a Friday night or whatever when they're doing that, I'm already in bed.
You should call Word Driving, though.
You know, okay. I know I should. Kids, you know, kids and everything keep me up and it put me to bed early. They get me up early and put me to bed early.
Yeah, and you guys have live music too, right?
We do. Saturdays.
That's a full service place. I mean, once you get there, you don't want to leave.
Right. I'm looking forward to. So, like, when we close up, and I'm going to put him on the spot right now and everyone else at Surf at that, we want to do a remote
thing. Oh, yeah.
So,
I'm just throwing that
out there in the internet sphere.
Right.
So that you know that that will be coming out.
So we'd like to invite a bunch of guests. I mean, a bunch of listeners go there and do like a live remote. I think it would be fun.
That'd be totally
fun. You got to make sure you stick around. I know you leave early. But.
Yeah. No problems.
All right. So coming up next couple weeks here, April 11th, we have Libertine Pub and Brewery. They're out of Morro Bay. He's coming on down, and we're going to just talk about some of the beer that if you're going up the coast. So this summer when you're camping, whatever it is, as you head up through you know, SLO and Pismo and everything, you know that there's some places to stop to pick up beer as you're heading up to Big Sur, you know, when you're camping. April 18th, I have as an off day because unfortunately, it's my kid's birthday that day.
That's not unfortunate.
It's just like, you know, that's a Thursday.
Hopefully your kids don't listen to the show.
Come on. It's on a Thursday. What's going on? No, I love you, Evan. Anyway, and then on April 25th, Montavo Tequila.
Yeah, we're getting
a local tequila.
Right before Cinco de Mayo. So that'd be
right before Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo prep show.
Can I come to that?
You're more than welcome to come.
You're welcome to come. And actually, we're looking at doing two Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, it's a big holiday. You need two shows.
Right.
It's very significant. It's a very important holiday.
Yeah. St. Patrick's Day got one primer. Right. We're doing two.
Just
because there's way too much to do for drink-wise.
We have margaritas. You have beer. You have tequila shots. I mean, there's just a million things you can do for Cinco de Mayo.
And talking about you know, the Vienna lagers, which are now ironically only brewed in Mexico.
Right.
Who knew?
And surf at one
point. And surf.
Hopefully again,
right.
Right. So, anyway, thanks for listening tonight.
Chaz, thank you for coming in. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. It was fun.
And so we'll end up putting this out on the airs here in a couple
Make sure
hours.
You guys go visit Surf, get a mini growler. This is really cool.
I like the mini growler.
Or a full growler. The South Soil is perfect in this size.
Right.
And then the strawberry wit or whatever, you can get it. The strawberry wahina, you can get in the big glass. Make sure you visit them this weekend.
All right. So we'll catch you next week. And this is Happy Hour.
Joby and Curtis.
And we'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Hey, thanks for listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. If you like this podcast, make sure you like us on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook under Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Give us a like and share it with all your friends. We'd appreciate it. Cheers!